Would you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, may the words of my mouth, may the thoughts of all of our hearts be found acceptable in your sight. For you indeed are the one who saves us, who strengthens us. Amen. There's a Jesuit priest by the name of Father James Martin. He wrote a book entitled Jesus, a Pilgrimage. And he shares the following story. A priest is giving a homily based on Jesus' command to love your enemies. Now he says, I'll bet that many of us feel as if we have enemies in our lives. And he says to the congregation, so raise your hands if you have many enemies. And a bunch of people raised their hands. Now raise your hands if you have only a few enemies. And about half as many of the first group raised their hands. Now raise your hands if you have only one or two enemies. And even fewer people raise their hands. See, says the priest, most of us feel like we have enemies. Now raise your hand if you have no enemies at all. And the priest looks around, and he's looking around, and finally, way in the back, a very, very old man raises his hand and stands up and says, I have no enemies whatsoever. Delighted, the priest invites him, the man, to the front of the church and says, what a blessing, the priest said. How old are you? I'm 98 years old and I have no enemies. What a wonderful Christian life you lead. And tell us all how it is that you have no enemies. All the bastards have died. Loving those that we don't like is one of the things that's the most difficult to consider as a follower of Jesus. Let's admit it. We all have people we don't like. I don't know if we call them enemies. We might call them enemies. We might even sometimes use the word hate. And we use various words like jerk and others that I can't really say from the pulpit. And we are living in a time when there seems to be a rise in that kind of thinking among people of denigrating, demeaning their enemies, those that they don't like. As people find more and more things to disagree with in our divisive times. We keep hearing about how divisive things are today. And it behooves us to think about how can I get past this kind of thinking? Well, let's begin with the passage in John. Now, I have to admit right off the bat, I may be looking at this passage a little differently today than you and others, and even I in the past have looked at it. There is, in the Muslim quarter of Jerusalem, even still today, a pool of Bethsaida, it's also called Bethesda or Bethsaida. This is the pool that's in our story today. And legend has it that that pool had healing powers. It was believed, as the lame man in our story testifies to, that an angel comes down into the pool to bathe, and when the angel's in the pool, the waters ripple. And the first person into the pool when the waters ripple will be healed. That was the legend, the belief. Now, we are to assume that the lame man in the pool, or the lame man in our story, is lame because he can't get into the pool before somebody else does. There's somebody always jumping in before him. And Jesus comes along and says, do you want to be healed? Yeah. And he says, okay, take up your mat and walk. And the gentleman gets up and walks. Now, over the years, countless sermons have been preached about this lame man's faith and obedience to Jesus by getting up and taking his mat and walking. But I think there's another way to look at the story. And I will admit, I got this idea from a United Church of Christ minister, Reverend Homer Henderson. And he said this in a sermon about this story. He says, "Is that what the story really says? I'm grateful to Frank Craddock and Will Willimon, whose insights made me take another look. I said in my last sermon conversation that preaching is improvisation, and I'm indebted to the improvisations of Craddock and Willimon on the text. So who is the cast-off?" he goes on to say. "Well, there's not one word about his faith in this text. Not one hint that he believed in Jesus or anything else except the magic water in the pool. And if we read just a little further than the 9th verse, which we read to today, we find out that he really wasn't even grateful for being healed. In fact, when the religious authorities see him walking around carrying his mat, they ask him, 'Who healed you?' And he said, 'I don't know.' And then when the authorities go on to inform him that healing and mat carrying is illegal on the Sabbath, he squeals and fingers Jesus and says, 'That's the one. Jesus broke the Sabbath laws, not me.' This is the man Jesus healed." So, is it possible that Jesus healed the man that many of the church today would say should not have been healed? We might hear people say, "This man doesn't deserve it." Or, "He believes in pagan beliefs and should not have been healed." Isn't that why we make people jump through hoops to receive assistance? Because we want to make sure they're deserving. As a pastor, when a person comes to me asking for help, I always want to figure out or find out if that person's story is true that they're telling me. And yet, over the years, I've realized it's impossible to ascertain the truth unless you have the FBI involved. And I've come to the realization that I have to take them at the word and give them the help they need if I can. But you know, there are those who just rub us the wrong way. And we don't want to have to deal with them. I'm thinking of the squeegee man. You remember the squeegee man? Used to go into New York City and around the tunnels, you'd be stopped, and this man would, or a woman would come out from the sidewalk and clean your windows real fast and then hold out your hand, wanting you to pay them for what they just did. And if you did, they were happy. If you didn't, they made you feel real guilty. When I thought of the lame man with this new insight, I thought of a squeegee man. People taken advantage usually rub us all the wrong way, and we don't like them. We didn't like them to the point that the New York police cracked down on the squeegee people. And right now, we very rarely see them. So all of this then begs the question, if this is the case, if we have an ungrateful person who doesn't believe in Jesus, why did Jesus heal him? He did not do it because of who the man was or his condition, but because of who he, Jesus, was. Again, Reverend Henderson writes, Fred Craddock talks about this story as a parable of God's grace. The undeserved, unmerited love of God, that's a radical idea. And it's right at the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's the reason Jesus taught. It's the reason Jesus could teach. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Not because of who they are, but because of who you are. as my disciples, he would say. And I find that this understanding of the story convicts me, as there are many times I get very disgusted with people. Like those times I'm waiting in line in the jug handle to get across to the street to go back over what I just came off of. And a car will go up on the right-hand side and then cut around and go just to break into the line going across. Oh, that burns me. And I think, who made them more important than me? Well, when people are indecisive in a traffic circle and they stop right as you're going around, oh, I almost hit you. Why did you stop? We all have those times. We just want to give somebody a piece of our minds. And it's not a nice piece. And yet our story today suggests that in feeling that way, we're acting on it. We're not displaying the all-embracing love of Jesus Christ. And maybe those people are the way they are because somebody did something to them or somebody didn't love them. How many of you remember Madeline Murray O'Hare? She was the famous atheist who used to be on TV shows and everything, talking about separation of church and state and getting prayer taken out of schools and all of that. She is the culprit. Well, I remember Phil Donahue had her on a number of times on his show. And he would also bring on with her the chaplain of Bourbon Street, Reverend Bob Harrington, who had his own issues later. But the two of them would go at it. Well, in 1995, Madeline O'Hare disappeared. We don't know what happened to her. And later, her diaries were discovered and shared. And it was noted in them that she often cried, "Somebody, somewhere, please love me. Somebody, somewhere, please love me." Everybody saw her as the face of evil. The face of a person trying to take religion out of America. And she was trying to find somebody to love her, who would love her. Sometimes the people who do these things that we don't like will rub us the wrong way. Just need someone to love them and see them as real people. And not just the face of an issue or the problem. We don't know what happened to the lame man after his encounter with Jesus. He kind of disappears. Did he come to believe? Who knows? Did he do good to and for others? Who knows? Did he continue to live his life as evidenced in our story that he was entitled to healing, that he deserved it? Who knows? But it doesn't really matter. He was a human person that needed healing. And so Christ healed him because of who Christ was. And this is how we are called to approach each and every person we meet. Even the squeegee man.